Welcome back to our show. You're listening to Friends with Benefits, and we have Blue Cirrus Consulting Manager partner Michelle Hager on the phone with us. Hi, Michelle. I thought Skip Rollins was a great interview, and Freeman Health have been through a lot of tragedies this past few years and now dealing with the pandemic.
Hi, Joe. It's a great show. I really enjoy Skip. He's a great interview and really appreciate hearing his stories and his experience in the pandemic and outside of that. And really excited about who we have today.
Yeah, our next guest on the radio show is a local doctor from Marshfield who was with us on last October's show explaining how Signature Healthcare relied mightily on telehealth psychiatry and telehealth screening that greatly impacted their ED, helping to divert many patients to more appropriate levels of care using SONS, SUNS, the sick or not sick clinic, before heading to the emergency department. And with Dr. Henry Grazioso tonight is his wife, Christine, also Dr. Grazioso, but affectionately known as Dr. G. She is the owner of South Shore Children's Dentistry in Cohasset and co-owner of Abington Children's Dentistry and Orthodontics in Abington. Dr. Christine graduated Boston College, where she received her BS in biology and received her Doctor of Dental Medicine degree at UConn. Dr. G received her certificate in pediatric dentistry from St. Christopher's Hospital for Children in Philadelphia.
So excited to speak to you, Dr. G. It's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, hello, Dr. G. Hello, Dr. Henry. How are you?
Hello, Joe. Hello, Michelle. Glad to be back.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Michelle. Thanks so much for having us on your show.
So I see you both became great doctors in different fields, helping people with your clinical expertise. And I see you both attended the University of Connecticut. Is that where you met?
Yes, we were both Connecticut kids, but didn't know each other before professional school. We both attended college out of state, but went back to Connecticut for med and dental school. UConn has a rigorous program in dental medicine, and the med and dental students are pretty much mixed for the first 2 years plus. So that's how we met. We were pretty much hanging out in class together.
Well, my first impression of Henry was that he was too smart. He sat in the last row of the lecture hall, and in our very first course in medical and dental school, I think it was cell and molecular biology, he was asking questions of the professor that went straight over my head. I didn't know what the teacher was talking about, and I certainly wouldn't have been able to ask questions. So despite that initial unfavorable impression, we ended up in the same friend group and became friends, all hung out together. And then something changed that spring, and we fell in love pretty quickly after that.
Oh, Dr. Henry, you are just a show off back there in the back, just quickly asking those important questions, seeing if you could test the professor. I can just see it.
Me too.
I'm a reformed man now.
Well, Christine had your number, so that's a great story.
So, Dr. G, I understand that you opened your first practice at the same time you had your first child, 21 years ago. That must have been a busy time of life. How do you make children feel comfortable while providing dental care? That must be tricky.
Well, Joe, it was a crazy time to be a brand new mother and open a pediatric dental practice all at the same time, but I really didn't know any better, so I just did what I had to do. I often was up, you know, till midnight doing paperwork and filling out insurance forms, because all of this was before we did everything computerized. I was really lucky, though. Henry was that 50-50 parent. He pitched in taking care of our son. He even would bring him to me for lunch sometimes so I could nurse our baby while I was at work. So I was really fortunate to have a true partner. And we were also really lucky. We had our mothers take turns driving up from Connecticut to help, you know, take care of our baby when we both were at work, which was fantastic. Very, very lucky. And of course, in addition to being a mom, being a pediatric dentist has been a true joy in my life. I love the kids I treat and their parents. And I'm really a total tooth geek. So helping to raise a generation of kids who love going to the dentist rather than fear it has always been my mission. And I enjoy every part of what I do, from treating the patients, forming the relationships with the entire family, and even running a small business.
So Dr. G, tell me a little bit about, I'm fascinated to know how you keep kids engaged, because the dentist can be a very scary place for some kids. And they need some reassurance. A lot of times people are bringing their kids even younger to the dentist to see how things are going versus, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, we waited until, you know, there was a problem. So what are your techniques to make things easier for kids in the dentist office?
Well, as a pediatric specialist, one of the things we really, really concentrate on is behavior management techniques. And it's all, you know, we really take our time to introduce the child to what we're doing in an office. And more importantly, we start dental visits. As you mentioned, it used to be go when you have a problem. We really encourage people to find a dental home for their child at the around the age of one, or at the minimum 6 months after the appearance of a first tooth. So by starting young, we're teaching prevention to the parents so that if a child is coming to see you once or twice a year, usually it's twice a year, and their parents are doing the proper prevention at home, it becomes just a fun experience. We have a lot of tricks up our sleeves, use a lot of psychology principles, and I do surround myself with some wonderful employees that also love treating kids, so we use a lot of the tricks. Yeah, and it's, yeah. I think it's the attitude, you know, the attitude. We are a fun, friendly office, and our motto is sunshine all the time. So that's what we try to give you, you know.
I love it.
Sunshine all the time.
I love it. Let's use that motto more, sunshine all the time. And I'm sure, you know, a healthy diet is important, you know, with these kids in prevention. I'm sure you're preaching that. But we're always promoting special needs programs on our radio show. And I saw on your website, drgrazioso.com, you treat special needs children, particularly those on the autism spectrum. Please explain how this program works to our listeners.
Well, I'll be honest, one of my absolutely favorite parts of being a pediatric dentist is treating my special needs patients and being a part of their lives. Every patient I see is important to me, but those who need a little bit more patience and a little bit more love are the ones who completely steal my heart. I become very attached to these kids and their families, and many of them are actually now adults, and they stay in my practice indefinitely because severing that relationship is just too difficult for them and for me.
Right.
We form really deep bonds over the years, and it takes a commitment on the part of the parents to bring their kids in to see me more frequently than what is typical. So I always admire what the parents do in order to make it a good experience for their kids.
Yeah, special needs kids are so lovable for those of you, Christine, you know, that are working with them every day, or speech pathologists or physical therapists or teachers that are in the classroom every single day. They know about this special relationship that you can have and develop with these special needs children. And it definitely is, you know, a deep emotional bond. It's amazing that you're doing that. And I'm sure the parents of those kids and adults really appreciate that. And
oh, I'm sure.
We have a mutual love and respect, I would say. Definitely.
Absolutely. Oh, talk about loving your healthcare provider, for sure, right?
For sure, yep. So my next question is over to Doc Henry. I know you're both raising two boys, and I want to ask and help me inform other working families, what challenges do you face of raising a family? I mean, as an ED doctor, you must be very busy, especially during the pandemic. How do you stay safe and balance family activities daily? I heard you're an excellent cook.
It's actually a bit easier these days as I'm not working as much clinically and don't do weekends or overnights anymore, but I did for almost 25 years. The main challenge, I think, when you have a couple who are both professionals is finding the balance between the importance of career and family. Fortunately, for Christine and I, although we're different in many ways, our core values are the same. And I think we always knew what we wanted as far as our family structure and how that was always going to be the most important thing in our lives. And so we were able to work it out so that if someone had slightly increased professional responsibilities for a period of time, the other one would sort of pick up the slack in those situations. That being said, as Christine pointed out, we also rely on family. And you, the bottom line is you need good friends, neighbors, and babysitters you trust. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to do it. Even though she described me as a 50% partner, as we all know, the reality for most families is that mom is the go-to regardless of how much else is on the plate. I believe that. As far as cooking, my grandmother was my main influence, my father's mother, who lived with us until she was in her late 90s. She showed me the basics. After all that, it's really innate. To be an audiophile or a musician, you have to like hearing things and be really good at listening. And to be a good cook, you have to really enjoy eating and be really good at tasting. It always bothers me when I hear that there's a chef that doesn't like to eat a lot. I'm very suspicious of that.
I'm skeptical of that. Skeptical.
Like, how much does this person really care?
Right. And Henry always has been the main cook in our household. Really? And he did teach our boys about cooking. And one of our sons really does enjoy it as well. And they all like to eat, for sure.
What's the family fave?
Seafood pasta.
Yeah, probably some kind of local catch in a red sauce with some pasta.
Nice.
I know one of your sons, is a professional fisherman, so that must be excellent to cook.
And the pro question, is that fresh made pasta?
Some occasionally.
Oh, impressive.
Not every time, though.
Impressive, nonetheless. Yeah.
Same question to you, Dr. G. How do you stay safe and balance family activities? It must be difficult owning your own dentistry business.
Well, you know, as Henry mentioned, our kids are older now, so it really has gotten a lot easier. They don't rely on us physically as much anymore. So when they were younger, it definitely was tough, and we did have to rely on other people. And I really believe in the saying, it takes a village. It really does. Yeah. So I also, once I had my children and opened my own practice, I cut my clinical hours to 24 a week. And then I was able to do a lot of the administrative stuff from home rather than being in the office. And I really hired well at my practice, meaning I surrounded myself with women who made my work life easier. And then that allowed me to enjoy the days at home with my kids.
So. That's such an important point. I just want to jump in, Joe, and just talk about that, because hiring the best people to make your life easier, better, whether it's in the emergency room and hiring the right docs and nurses and assistants and all those folks, or in the dentist office where, you know, it's the hygienists, it's the staff that are helping you in the front office, et cetera. But it doesn't matter what business it is, hiring really well and finding the people that fit your culture and fit your work ethic, so important.
So true, Michelle. I have to give you a shout out to my team at South Shore Children's Dentistry and Abington Children's Dentistry.
Do it.
They are fantastic. I really have surrounded myself with amazing people. They make the practice what it is. It's not only me. And it really is. Everyone is happy to work there, and our patients feel it.
It's a culture you've developed. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Dr. G, how did you keep everybody safe at the practice? What was your method for keeping people safe from the pandemic?
You know, last March, when it became evident that something wasn't right, I closed my office before we were ever told to or it was suggested. Just, I knew something wasn't right. And then I spent the next 3 months reading, researching, watching webinars, all while fielding and seeing the emergency patients that I needed to take care of. I had always used a form of telehealth in my practice to triage patients after hours and on the weekends, but it became an integral part of what I did for a few months at the beginning of the pandemic. You know, dentists and our teams have always been infection control specialists, and we've always worn masks. So we had a head start over our medical colleagues. In fact, in early 2020, as I watched what was going on in China, I started ordering masks to be prepared. And when the hospitals and the nurses were left without masks, it was the dental community who donated our supplies to them. So yeah. I personally donated 5,000 masks to hospitals and to the Nurses Association. And I know, you know, the majority of my dental colleagues did the same. And so then in addition, with all the research I was doing, I implemented a high-tech air purification system throughout the office. And then I implemented a technique called cold fogging, which I had learned from a physician out of Mass General Hospital. And the days before I was getting ready to open up the practice again and head back in to start seeing my urgent care patients, and then eventually to really get the practice back up and running with all of our patients, I had a meltdown. I really had a meltdown, and I was afraid. I was really afraid. And it was Henry who lifted me up, and he set me straight. He said, you've done everything you possibly can to keep your patients and your employees safe, and you have to trust that it will be okay. And I honestly, I'll forever be grateful for his support during a time that I really needed it.
I have two questions for you, because first of all, that was just packed with information. Thank you. But I think your stress that you experienced, you said, I had a breakdown. I really just couldn't, you know, wasn't sure I was going to be. I think this is something that not only happened, and Dr. Henry, you can comment on this as well, but this is something that every healthcare worker is dealing with. Am I protected enough? Am I protecting my patients enough? And just not knowing. And at some point, you just sort of had to let go and say, I'm doing all that I possibly can. But that level of what I will refer to as PTSD can't, because healthcare workers, no matter if you're a dentist or in the hospital itself, you're always trying to do everything that you possibly can to make sure your patients are protected and well cared for. So how did you deal with that stress with not only yourself, but also your colleagues?
No, I mean, it's an incredibly complex issue. I'm fairly certain that we will see some attrition, particularly in the higher acuity areas of medicine, that will follow shortly after the pandemic. I think that people are dedicated and won't leave. But as they interpret what's happened to them over the past months, I think some are going to conclude that they would rather do something else. Now, I also think that having lived through the pandemic will be inspirational to many people who are younger now, and they may be inspired to go into healthcare profession. So hopefully they'll be there to take those places. You know, all the hospitals have done a lot to try to help staff, but really we rely on our colleagues. We rely on having each other to decompress with. Christine and I are lucky that we're, you know, as difficult as it is to have a family with two professionals, you know, we can go home and complain to each other about what happened that day, and it makes sense to the other person most of the time. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult issue. I don't know that we'll really know the fallout for several years, to be honest.
There's a little story. We have a friend who is a good soul, and she sent in with Henry a couple times. One time, I think, was it pizza, Henry, for the nursing staff? And then just recently, she sent in big baskets. She called them like buckets of love, and they had little, if you need, basically little sayings of what you might need. And she had Henry bring it up to the ICU nurses and some other nurses. And I think that little gesture just lifted them up too. Henry, you might be able to describe it better than I did, but.
Oh yeah. Well, it was greatly appreciated by the staff. You know, the pandemic has lasted so long. As with a lot of other traumatic events, there tends to be an outpouring of support early on. You know, it's almost like after a family tragedy, everyone's there for the first 2 weeks. It's like, then what do you have?
Right.
And especially when something lasts 9 months, it's like, yeah, everybody is perfectly capable of saying, you know, hashtag healthcare heroes, but you know, the parades and the free meals have dried up. So anything to, you know, it's dragging on. And I think anything to lift the spirits of staff is certainly welcome.
You know, that's such a good point. There's something locally that we, people know that I'm in South Carolina and that we do here, and I'm sure it's done in many, many areas across the country, but was adopt a healthcare hero. And so our responsibility is to send those in notes of encouragement, to send things to our individual healthcare hero to prop them up, whether that's, you know, a bouquet of flowers or a card or a note to say, you know, we appreciate what you're doing and whatever we can do as individuals. So if you have that in your area, then take a look around and Google and see if you can find Adopt a Healthcare Hero in your area. But I wanted to ask my second question. Sorry, Joe, I know I've taken a lot of time here, but Dr. G, you mentioned cold fogging. Can you tell us about what that is?
Yeah, that is
new. Sure. As I said, I learned about it from Dr. Leslie Fang. He's a doctor at Mass General Hospital, and I watched all his webinars. He does a lot of dental webinars. He's a physician, and he's treated plenty of COVID patients. And he's the one I learned about it from. But it is, we make our own, but you can purchase it, hypochlorous acid, which is a non-toxic solution. It's what is used, depending on the parts per million and the pH, what's used in eye drops and things that we can put in our body. And at different concentrations, it has different effects. So we make our own hypochlorous acid, and you make it, we bought this machine that kind of electrifies the water. You make it with water, salt, and a little bit of vinegar. And then what they have found is it is virucidal, so it kills virus. So the theory is that if you have aerosolized by doing a filling or anything in your office, you have aerosolized potential virus, what you spray it, it's called fogging, but it's in like almost like a bug sprayer type machine. Mm-hmm. You spray it into the air, it's heavy enough that it will come down, it'll kill the virus, and then just bring it all down to the floor. So in effect, just, and it's non-toxic. So you can be, it can hit you. So it's been a really nice addition. Just one more level of feeling like you're protecting everybody, your patients, yourself.
That's amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, you heard it here, cold fogging. Excellent. So remember, February is Valentine's month. Show your love and appreciation to your local doctors and healthcare workers and dentists, and just let them know that how much we appreciate their effort and their dedication to getting us through this very serious pandemic. But I want to get back to Dr. Henry. The last time we spoke, you were teaching in the resident training in the ambulatory department and learning about telehealth and its use in particular specialties. You mentioned 600 to 700 residents, applicants in October for 9 spots. Learning telehealth in the ambulatory block, ophthalmology, dermatology, and other patient interaction being used for care. Have these programs expanded at Signature?
I would say they have not so much expanded as continued. I think that the medical community as a whole was forced to learn much, much more than it had previously about telehealth as the pandemic unfolded. But the medical students and residents are particularly impacted because it's coming at a vulnerable time in their training. It also turned out that since the residents tend to be younger than the attending physicians, that they often had more facility with this modality than the people they were supposed to be learning from. So I don't know if you recall, but I recounted a story of one of our residents being mightily important in actually setting up the telehealth system that is largely used in our outpatient setting now. Because he had the technical know-how to do it.
Yeah, he had IT experience.
Yeah, he had done a gap year or two, and he had worked in that. And he's like, "Oh, I can help you with that." And they still ask me about him. But it was true for his class, and it's true for the class that's coming in now as well that we're interviewing. I think the current cohort of residents will necessarily have more exposure to telehealth than any previous trainees. It has been an absolutely involved in certainly all of the outpatient settings, but even some of the inpatient settings. This year, I've noticed a substantial proportion of applicants with telehealth experience during med school. So they're going to have experience even before they get to us. The typical scenario is that they were taken off rotations last March through, say, June, and they were offered opportunities. They weren't always mandatory. Their formal training became remote, but they were offered opportunities to help out with telehealth and remote healthcare options, and most of them took it. I have even reviewed a few applications of people that were interviewing for the residency who conducted research on telehealth applications. And depending on the year for our residency, a transitional year residency program, about a third to half of the residents we train are going into dermatology or ophthalmology. And these specialties might be positioned to benefit greatly as they lend themselves to visual diagnosis for some conditions. So I guess the overall answer is there's much more involvement with it. It's happening earlier in their training, and they're probably better at it than their older mentors.
Yeah, they're integrating it into practice. That's already part of what they know to be medical practice, or in your case, Dr. G, dentistry practice. So they're already putting it together as part of how they want to care for those patients. Do you think that this kind of telepractice is here to stay?
Definitely. I think that even, and we could all only wish for this time, when the pandemic is truly over or as it's going to be, there will definitely be an incredible lasting impact of the telehealth involvement during the pandemic, because many offices have learned that they can run certain types of visits more efficiently on that form. It can debulk the office. I think, honestly, some of the impact is also going to be driven by third-party payers who are going to realize that, you know what, some of those visits probably could have been by telehealth. And we all may maintain our altruism, but we have to be realists. Someone has to pay for medical care, and most of the time it's third-party payers. And in as much as we could be more efficient with delivering that care, I think everybody in medicine are going to feel those pressures, and it's going to drive more care to those types of modalities if possible.
True, and I'll jump on my soapbox a little bit on here, but I think that you mentioned the third party payers, and from a listener perspective, you'd think, well, why does it matter? I'm going to see a patient in the ER, or I'm going to see them online. It's just one for one, but in fact, it's not really one for one. When you see a patient, as you know, Dr. G or Dr. Henry or Dr. D, you see them in your brick and mortar location, the cost model for you in those locations is much higher because you're providing a whole continuum of care for those patients versus these telehealth events, which are just episodic. I have an earache, I get it fixed, I get my prescription, I move on. Versus I'm actually helping to care for you and your health throughout your lifetime. So there's a lot of debate right now about how those things should be paid for, and I'm interested long-term. We'll have to have you guys back to talk about that in the long-term. But I know, Joe, you were gonna ask Dr. G about this a little bit more.
Yeah, we don't hear a lot about teledentistry. So let's hear from Dr. G. Telehealth can be used as teledentistry and help provide a schedule appointments and signing consent forms before treatments and surgeries. And most follow-ups can be done using teledentistry communication technology. Every patient needs a dental care provider, and to be connected to a dentist will help free up the ER. How are you utilizing telehealth in your practice? Are you familiar with National Network of Oral Health Access?
I'm only vaguely familiar with the NNOHA, but I will say that prevention of dental disease is at the core of what we do, especially as a pediatric dentist. So as I mentioned previously, by having a child's first dental visit at age one, it allows us to educate the parents on how to prevent cavities and gingivitis, because it's well known that poor oral health contributes to poor overall health. So we always preach prevention. It starts with nutrition, but that's a whole other topic that we could talk about for a whole nother segment. And you nailed it with keeping patients out of the ER. That's what a lot of dentistry in emergencies do. We take care of our own emergencies so they don't have to go to the ER. And that was super important during the beginning of this pandemic, March, April, May last year. One of my colleagues started a free platform to connect dental emergencies with dentists so that we could keep those patients out of the ER. And I think it was something like 16,000 patients were served and kept out of the ER during the beginning of the pandemic. You know, and as I mentioned, I've used teledentistry on a daily basis. Maybe we didn't really call it that, but someone wants to know, do I need to come in? They could shoot me a picture and I could look at it and then call them and we can discuss the photo. We use teledentistry as far as all of our, we have online forms for everything so that we're doing kind of a virtual waiting room now. No one's coming in and checking in, and we're trying to keep, you know, social distancing kind of an ongoing thing in our office. So we have people do online forms. We were doing this before the pandemic, actually, though. I had a lot of digital access. So going over to this technology in the pandemic was not that big of a deal for our offices. But for some, it was, because they didn't have access to all of this. But yeah, we do use it. The one thing I would say about teledentistry, you know, dentistry is really a surgical specialty, meaning it's hands-on. So we can't use it to replace much of what we do, but we can use it in the forms you talked about. You know, a great deal we can use it for triage and for filling out forms and all of that. So there is a place for it without a doubt. And I think it will only increase over time, but it will never replace the surgical care we give. It just can't.
In consultation as well with other, you know, medical professionals that may not have an access to a dentist in their community or in their emergency room, you could consult. And is this?
Oh, that would be an excellent use. You know, I don't think it's happened that much right now, but it would be an excellent use of the technology. You know, back 20 years ago, Henry used to have his colleagues, all the ER docs would call me about the dental stuff. I think I taught you how to do injections too, on, you know, how to get people out of pain. But yeah, it was kind of very informal, but having a formal methodology would really be helpful.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, that's one of the main problems. Before we knew about secure versus unsecure networks, when we were novices, you know, we would occasionally send information on a cell phone just to try to facilitate patient care. You know, fortunately, we know better now, and we can't continue those practices, so we have to use secure platforms.
Right.
Yep. That's so true. But you're able to communicate, and you're able to take care for your patients, and your patients would be out of pain. Thank goodness for the injection training that you got from Dr. G. Henry, I'm sure you know how to do an injection now into the gum. So you're able to take care of those patients. That's great. I think that's fantastic. And I know from my own experience, there's even some scanner software you can put in your mouth from a dental perspective and put that into your mouth and then take pictures of the top and the bottom and the whatever parts of your mouth, and the dentist will look at it. And it's from a diagnostic perspective and really a visual perspective, but as you said, it's really you know, personal and surgical type of practice. You can get in there and really see them. It's fascinating. I really appreciate you sharing your experience with teledentistry and your practice, and Dr. Henry, thanks so much for being here again.
Yeah, we're talking to two great doctors. Thank you both for your time tonight, Dr. Christine and Dr. Henry Grazioso. The show's goal is to bring our listeners, educated and established doctors, nurses, and healthcare workers in to speak with us. We want to provide our listeners the latest information in healthcare, not only locally, but on a national level.
Hey, thank you. This was a lot of fun. I hope you have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dr. G and Dr. Henry and Joe. This was a lot of fun. It was great to hear from all of you and your experiences and your practices. And we do love our healthcare heroes. I know it's an easy one to say, hashtag healthcare heroes, but you guys are just out there on the front lines, and really appreciate it. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much.
Yep. This is Friends with Benefits on WATD Radio 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening.